Welcome, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the program, we'll look at a recent Guardian investigation about the rise of student homelessness in Monterey County, California, and a little-known program that has provided hope and educational opportunities to tens of thousands of migrant children, but the Trump administration now wants to eliminate it. But first, we'll discuss the future of the newspaper industry and what has contributed to its decline in the past decade or so. In 2011, Alden Global Capital, a secretive hedge fund, started gobbling up newspapers across the country and gutting them. But nobody knew why until investigative journalist Julie Reynolds decided to look into Alden and find out what was destroying local journalism. In 2015, she began investigating the hedge fund, which had bought her small town daily, the Monterey County Herald, along with more than 100 other newspapers nationwide. The new documentary, Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink, reveals how Alden Global Capital has plundered America's newspapers and how journalists are fighting back to keep their jobs and rebuild local journalism across America. And we're very pleased to welcome the director of that film. Rick Goldsmith is a veteran documentary filmmaker who has been twice nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature, including for Tell the Truth and Run, George Seldes and the American Press, and The Most Dangerous Man in America, Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, which also won a Peabody Award. And he's the director of Stripped for Parts, as I mentioned, and as we're going to talk about today. So it's good to have you back with us on the program, Rick.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy you can join us. And we're also joined by Julie Reynolds, who I mentioned had uncovered what was going on with Alden Global Capital. Julie is a freelance journalist who has reported for the Center for Investigative Reporting, The Nation, NPR, PBS, The Imprint, and many other outlets. She's also co-founder of Voices of Monterey Bay and associate editor at The Imprint. Welcome back to the show, Julie.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I want to let listeners know that Stripped for Parts will be streamed free on demand on PBS.org and the PBS app starting October 1st. It will also be broadcast nationwide on PBS-affiliated stations at various dates and times beginning also on October 1st. So check your local listings. You can also find out more information by going to KALW.org and click on news, and you'll find Your Call there, and you can see our show page where we have all that information posted and more. So Rick and Julie, ever since we had you on the show a few months ago, a lot has happened. And every day it seems like it just brings something else new and depressing about local journalism. Everything from massive funding cuts and executive orders to billion-dollar lawsuits. There was the $1.1 billion cut to public broadcasting that's hitting NPR and PBS stations hard. So I wanted to start, and Rick, maybe I'll start with you on this. What do you think this means, all the events that have happened since we had you on, really, and what we're in the moment now dealing with? What do you think this means for the future of journalism and freedom of the press?
Well, I think the many of the developments are very dire and need a lot of attention. I think what it means to the future of journalism is going to depend on us. It's going to depend on individual communities getting together to support the news organizations that they have, like public radio, like these, startups, nonprofits, even the legacy papers. Some of the legacy papers are still quite good. And the journalists themselves, who have kind of taken the lead since I got into this story, which was a couple of years after Julie started. I got into the story in the spring of 2018, when there was a development called the Denver Rebellion. So journalists were taking the lead in alerting the public to what was happening in a subset of newspapers, but a big subset, which was newspapers owned by hedge funds and private equity.
And Julie, same question for you. What do you make of this moment and what it means for the future of journalism?
Well, it's really a mixed bag, but I always cling to hope, and for good reason, I think, in this case. good friend of mine once said, you know, when the big picture stuff gets so overwhelming, as is happening right now, you know, we need to just turn and help somebody right next to us, or do good right next to us, right in front of our face. And I think this is a moment when we're having huge, you know, constitutional level issues on the macro level about free speech. But on the micro level, there's amazing stuff happening. I mean, the number of nonprofit news organizations starting up, some have gotten to really sustainable levels where they're not worried about their survival anymore. They're able to hang in there. They don't need to get rich. They just need to keep going. And I'm very inspired by a lot of what's going on the ground level.
Well, I appreciate hearing about some of this reasons for optimism, but there are a lot of trends really working against journalists. And I would just note one pretty alarming stat that in 2002, the U.S. had about 40 journalists per 100,000 residents. And today, the national average is about 8.2. So it's been a drop of about 75% in terms of the rate of journalists per resident in this country. And now we've got trends unfolding like social media, where a lot of people are really predominantly getting their news. You also have AI starting to have an outsized influence on the industry. Julie, what do you make of those changes and what that might mean for journalism?
Well, there's no doubt that, we're still in a crisis situation, despite this hope on the ground level. And that 75% figure is absolutely accurate. I do see a few things shifting. We're starting to talk about maybe getting some public support here in California. We have a bill that's, I believe, still on the governor's desk waiting to be signed to support hyper-local journalism, community-based journalism, with some state and Google grant funding. And there are movements going around. And I think one of the side effects of the crisis in local news now is that people are finally starting to become aware of it. And I'm talking about the readers, the consumers of the news, at least in certain communities. They're becoming aware of what's going on with their local news, and they're eager to support any kind of independent news operations if they can learn about them. But that doesn't overshadow the impact of these news deserts that are just expanding all over the nation. It's all related. Autocrats get to rise up when there's a lack of information, when there's a lack of watchdogs. So we are in very critical times. We're at a point where we can save and preserve our media. We can do what we can, or we're going to lose it.
Well, very well said. And the stakes couldn't be higher, as you just described. Rick, I wanted to just give you a chance to add to what, if you have anything to add to what Julie said, particularly about these trends that we're seeing and the role of AI and social media kind of eroding away this base of local news consumption.
Well, I think those are all, troubling trends. But I see something else happening as well. I've been traveling around with this film for almost 2 years now, since it's been finished, and I encounter a lot of young people. I've been on college campuses is one place I've been. And what I'm finding is that the bug for journalism has never been stronger, in spite of the kind of the business model or, the availability of jobs, which seems to be shrinking. Young people, a new generation coming up are passionate about calling out corruption, about uncovering abuse of power. And what I think is happening is, as, over the last 20 years, an older generation has seen this decline in newspapers and decline in journalism per se. But the younger generation is beginning to, they know how their peers get news. They know how they share information. They know what the pluses and minuses are of social media. And what I'm hearing from them are kind of like new ideas, new solutions to invigorate local journalism, and also to deal with the new realities of, the lack of a business model that's been based on advertising. And I think there's also more of a drive than there have been in previous generations to do literally public service journalism, covering communities that haven't had voices before, covering the homeless, covering minorities, not being driven by, upper middle class values that the ads of the old newspapers used to be geared towards. So there are a lot of good trends. Some of the troubling things have been, the attacks on journalism and coming from the top, coming from this administration. That's the elephant in the room as well.
Right, Rick, can I add one example to
yeah,
the?
Please, go ahead, Julie.
I just found out. Well, I've been hearing about in our community, there's a nonprofit newsroom called Santa Cruz Local, and instead of publishing all their stories, on the traditional news website, which is now a tradition, right, replacing the piece of paper we used to get. But they're being way more creative than that. So they're sending out news stories in Spanish to the farm worker community on WhatsApp. So, because everyone has WhatsApp to make, free international calls to family. And so, that's just an example of this kind of stuff might be under the radar of the doom speakers who, see that print journalism, yes, is in a huge crisis, but there are much more creative ways of getting news out there that might not be getting noticed by, mainstream media analysts. But we're seeing this happening on the ground all the time. Another reporter was communicating with the homeless community via regular text messages, group texts, so that he would just send out reports to them of news in their community. So, there's a lot of creative things going on.
So a lot of local innovation and good to hear that, that maybe the kids are all right. So generational change taking hold as well. If you're just joining us, this is Ethan Elkind and you're listening to Your Calls Media Roundtable. And we're talking about the state of local journalism and the documentary Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink, how it detailed the struggle against a hedge fund that has been stripping local journalism for parts. We're talking to the director of that film, Rick Goldsmith, a veteran documentary filmmaker, and Julie Reynolds, freelance journalist, who has reported for the Center for Investigative Reporting and multiple other outlets and helped uncover the story of this hedge fund. And we want to open up the phone lines and hear from you. If you subscribe to a local newspaper, we'd love to hear how that's going for you and what you like about local news. Or if not, where do you get your news and information? What sources of news do you support? Of course, we always hope you support KALW here, home of Your Call, but we'd love to find out where you get your news and what sources of news you do like to support. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255, or you can also email us at yourcall@kalw.org. And let's talk a bit about the film here now. Julie, I want to start with you. Can you just talk more about or tell us the story here of this hedge fund? When did you start suspecting that Alden was this hedge fund was up to something with local newspapers across the country?
Well, I worked at the Monterey Herald for 10 years and it was taken over by Alden midway through my 10 years there. So I saw the impact immediately on us. The downsizing was insane to the point no hot water in the building, leaky roof. So we just had to move plants under the leaks, that kind of thing going on. No supplies, no reporter pads, no manila folders. So I started poking around and realized that, our building got sold and we had to move into rented quarters. And eventually decided I needed to leave the paper. I took a voluntary, not even a buyout, just a voluntary leave. but I started working for the union that represented us reporters, the News Guild, and they said, you're an investigative reporter. Why don't you look into Alden? And of course, I jumped on it because I had already, had suspicions that, they're not up to anything good, seeing what had happened at our paper, and realized that they were actually selling the buildings of all the papers that they owned. I found a real estate arm that they were secretly operating or very, very much under the radar. And found that it was selling off all this newspaper assets printing presses, buildings. They were causing all kinds of problems with the journalism, but they didn't care. And that just escalated to realize this was a New York-based hedge fund. It had branches in the Cayman Islands. They were founded in the Isle of Jersey, these tax secrecy havens. And I was like, this is not your traditional newspaper owner. So luckily, with the support of the union itself, a lot of us were able to investigate and dig up a lot of information about Alden Global Capital.
Well, in the film, Julie, we see you creating a board with sticky notes and pictures trying to put Alden's structure in place. What did you find out about them, and particularly this company called 20 Lake Holdings, which is a real estate company? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I found out that their tentacles ran far and wide. You know, they had no interest in particular business sectors. They invested in distressed businesses. So that could be anything from Payless shoe stores to a Southern pharmacy chain. Didn't matter. If a business was struggling, their model was to gobble it up. And not do the traditional thing you'd think, which would be to, like, build up the business and sell it for a profit. No, that's not what these vulture investors do. They buy struggling businesses, they straddle them with even more debt, take out any assets they can, get rid of personnel as much as possible, so they're cutting costs. And that's how they make their money. And then they drag that on for as long as they can. They've had a surprisingly long run with newspapers, I've found out. And, you know, with the help of other journalists around the country, we're just able to uncover these kinds of activities. We were able to find out that they had actually spent the pension money of hundreds of millions of dollars, basically, that were part of the chain of Media News Group newspapers that Alden had acquired. I do want to add one moment again. Here I am being Pollyanna, but one moment of good news was interesting. This past week, Alden tried to take over the Dallas Morning News and even outbid the Hearst Corporation, which, of course, owns the San Francisco Chronicle. And the shareholders rejected Alden summarily. In fact, the largest shareholder, which is the family that owned and created the Dallas Morning News, said no way ever would he sell to Alden. And so they lost, you know, maybe $1 million or so in that deal by rejecting Alden and taking Hearst, but they realized there was something more valuable than just money at stake.
Well, Julie, we will take good news wherever we can get it. And it is right? It is good to hear that there are some local outlets pushing back. Rick Goldsmith, you really elevated this story and put such an amazing kind of narrative arc on it, this what Julie did to uncover what happened here in Stripped for Parts. And it really goes against, counters so much of the sort of public, you know, common assumption around the decline of the newspaper industry, which is so much focused on, you know, the digital revolution. Now, how central has that argument been that this is really just economics and technology changes, as opposed to having this hedge fund actively plunder these outlets?
Well, I think the important thing to notice is that the traditional publishers kind of had a twofold goal. One was to make money, and a lot of them got rich in the newspaper game, you know, for a couple of hundred years. That happened until probably the beginning of this century. And the second was to serve the community, and many of them did that quite well. Some of them not so well, but they were serving the community. What was different with hedge funds was they had only one mission, and that was to make money. And so the mission of serving the public went away, and traditional publishers, not always, but traditional publishers often came from the community. And that local connection, that local ownership was really, really important. And any news organization really needs, from top to bottom, to be rooted in the community. And with hedge funds, once again, that was gone. These were national companies. They had no interest in the community at all, sometimes didn't know what was happening. Here we had the East Bay Times at the fire, the ghost ship fire. They got a Pulitzer Prize, and they never even got a call from their hedge fund owners. Cool. So that's what's different. The business model has failed, And a lot of the reasons that are cited, the internet and people's reading habits and Craigslist, those are legitimate. But any struggling business, if they want to make the business go, they come up with creative ideas. And that's where the hedge funds took advantage of the failing business model and ran into the ground. And they're doing that in industries throughout the country, not just newspapers. And we're all suffering from it.
Well, we're speaking with Rick Goldsmith, veteran documentary filmmaker, twice nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature, and director of Stripped for Parts: American Journalism on the Brink. Also joined by Julie Reynolds, freelance journalist who has reported for The Nation, NPR, PBS, and other outlets. Also co-founder of Voices of Monterey Bay and associate editor at The Imprint. We're talking about the state of local news in America, how hedge funds like Alden Global Capital are helping to plunder what is already a declining industry. And we would love to hear from you. The phone lines are open. If you subscribe to a local newspaper and have a story to tell, if you have thoughts about what should be done to try to counteract the loss of local news, or if you have a hopeful story to tell, innovation like what we've heard Julie and Rick talk about at the local level to bring more local news to people, the number to call to join the conversation, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or email any questions or comments you have to yourcall@kalw.org. Julie, just to go back to the story here of Alden, Randall Smith is the founder and chief investments of the company, and he basically is looking for troubled companies making profits by stripping off their assets and making deep cuts. Can you talk more about Randall Smith and why they became so focused on the newspaper industry?
Well, Randall goes way back. He's known as the father of vulture investing. There's profiles of him in the New York Times from the 80s, where he kind of invented this whole subsector of the economy. Always been very, very secretive since that original New York Times story, and even in that New York Times story, he declined to give an interview, and has always shied away from the press. And there's only one photo circulating on the internet that I know of. Highly, highly secretive businessman. Very close knit. Alden is a very small investment firm. And he took a young protege named Heath Freeman, who's the one who's been kind of in charge of running all the newspapers across the country. He owns numerous mansions. Both of them own numerous mansions. Smith, particularly, at one point I counted 16 Florida mansions worth over $50 million. Buying more mansions at the same time that he was just gutting his newspaper chain. What all the other chains were doing, this laying off, gradually downsizing of their newsrooms, Alden accelerated tenfold. The speed at which they dismantled their papers is quite stunning. And numerous papers were shut down, others just a shadow of their former selves. One scholar uses the term ghost newspapers to indicate these papers that just have wire stories, shared stories, nothing local, nothing original, but they're still printing a couple of pieces of paper and charging exorbitant subscription rates. So he has no interest in journalism whatsoever. It could be a widget factory, it can be anything. And Smith's investments have been all over the map. But they do follow this pattern of buying struggling companies and saddling with them with untenable debt. But that's not their problem, because it's the company that owes the money that they borrowed and used and invested in other things and played with. And so the company is saddled with this debt and then is forced to attain incredible profit margins. And make no mistake, all of these newspapers are making very hefty profits, or Alden would not be there. They would not be trying to buy Dallas Morning News. And they just, had acquired the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, which was a wonderful, independent newspaper until Alden got its hands on it recently.
Well, this has also affected the San Francisco Bay Area for listeners based Here, East Bay Times, as Rick mentioned, and KQED in May reported that the Press Democrat, the longtime local newspaper of Santa Rosa and Sonoma County, has been sold to Media News Group, which is a newspaper publisher owned by Alden as well. And I'm wondering then how many of these outlets are here in California? Julie, do you happen to know offhand?
Quite a few. The majority, actually, of Alden's circulation is in California. They own the entire Bay Area News Group. So that's every Marin, San Jose, Santa Cruz, Monterey, Northern California, Chico, all kinds of papers there. And they also own the Southern California News Group, including this San Diego paper. So almost everything except the LA Times in Southern California. So their reaching California is quite substantial.
Well, I will note this is public radio. They don't own KLW Radio. So if you're just joining us, this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Would love to hear from you. We're going to keep on this topic for a few more minutes here. So if you do have any questions, do dial in 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255 or email at yourcall@kalw.org. Joined by Rick Smith, the director of Strip for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink, and Julie Reynolds, freelance journalist who helped uncover this story. Well, I want to kind of close things out here on a bit of a more hopeful note. Both of you have talked about some of the innovation that's happening. And Julie, you and other journalists from major newsrooms, Chicago, Colorado, other places have started nonprofit newsrooms. Can you talk about that business model? Is this sustainable?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm very hopeful about it. And I don't think there's just one way to do it. I had a really interesting evening this week where we did screen Stripped for Parts in Santa Cruz. And I was there with Neil Chase, editor of Cal Matters, which is a statewide nonprofit news source. And they not only produce stories, but they share them with anybody, any local outlet that wants to run them. So there's this very helping each other kind of ecosystem in this world, by the way. And they don't care if you're for-profit or nonprofit. If you want to run their stories, you can run their stories. And then all the way to Voices of Monterey Bay, where we're a hyper-local, tiny, tiny little 2.5-person operation. We consider ourselves like a little magazine, really. We are not replacing your local paper of record. And then in between that, there was Lookout Santa Cruz, which is a for-profit public benefit model. And that really has become the paper of record in Santa Cruz. I mean, they've been very successful at replacing that daily news source where what happened at the city council meeting last night? What happened with the school board? What's going on with the weather right now? You know, are we having a storm situation? And, you know, all that local news you would turn to your paper for. They've done that. And so I'm looking at success on various levels going on all the time right now. And I think what we're going to keep seeing is just a million experiments across the country and also around the world where we're just reinventing journalism. And there's a good reason to reinvent mainstream media. There's a good opportunity for us. All the neglected voices, the young people who weren't getting their stories out there now have opportunities to do it in really creative ways.
And Rick, just same question for you. You talked a bit about some of the hopeful things happening. What do you see, and especially in the response to Strip for Parts coming out, what do you see as some really encouraging models coming out now to keep local journalism alive?
Well, I think, as I said before, young people are coming up with different models. What is very encouraging is that there are news partnerships. Scoops are no longer like the desired thing. Oh, I've got to get there and beat out my competition. It's more new news organizations creating a partnership with public radio or even legacy papers with public radio. And the kind of inventing, reinvigorating and reinventing models on how to gather news, how to use podcasts, how to use community groups to dig up information and communicate information, and how to use social media in a creative way that's different than some of the worst parts of social media, which is, you know, filled with misinformation and disinformation. So it's we're in a period with a lot of creativity going into how can we make journalism work, and especially for local communities.
Well, I appreciate both of you highlighting both the story of Alden Global Capital, what's happening with local news, and also these hopeful developments that are keeping local news alive and hopefully in a position to grow and thrive in the future. Rick Goldsmith, veteran documentary filmmaker and director of Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink. Thank you so much for joining us here on Your Calls Media Roundtable.
And thanks for having us.
And Julie Reynolds, freelance journalist, the co-founder of Voices of Monterey Bay. Thank you for coming on Your Calls Media Roundtable.
And likewise, thank you.
And congratulations also to both of you on the film. Stripped for Parts will be streamed free on demand on PBS.org and the PBS app starting October 1st and broadcast nationwide on PBS affiliated stations at various dates and times also beginning on October 1st. Find out more information on our website. Go to KALW.org, click on news, and you'll find our program, Your Call. You'll see the show page where we've got more information on it. Coming up next, we're going to talk about how student homelessness is soaring in Monterey County, California, and also devastating cuts to a little-known federal program that has given migrant children a path to opportunity. That's coming up next here on Your Calls Media Roundtable, so stay with us after this short break.